Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5 over North America and worldwide on the Internet 7 days a week. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay with us for tonight's special report on the national debt right after this timely message. Hey, you know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Now, our traditional American values are rooted in individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, and we covet our neighbor's property, and then we're taught to call that income redistribution. Well, you know, we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods called government. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve notes. But we're not getting away with these crimes. And if you'll take a look, we're paying 74% now for everything that we create and produce in taxes. That's right, 74% of everything that you and I are creating, we're now paying in taxes at all levels of government. And we live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a $7 trillion national debt. We're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. Our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. And we live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in our Constitution. If you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and ask for my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call me right now at 417-273-4967 to order yours. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, click on to the email and send me an email request. Now that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the national debt, not just what does the federal government owe, but what are the states, cities, counties, what do you and I owe, what are the total obligations that we have, and it's around $200 trillion. Nobody knows exactly for sure. It's growing rapidly. We're inflating as fast as we can. Now, if I was the only guy out here sounding this clarion call and saying, you know, I think we got a problem here, you might sit back and say, you know, that guy Gordon is an alarmist. So let's take a look at what some of the famous people of our society and around the world have had to say about this monetary system and see if I'm the only guy in the world that believes this, or if maybe there's three or four other guys out there that are a little concerned about what's going on too. Here are some famous quotations. Mayor Ansel Rothschild in the year 1700. He said, "You permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." If that statement is true, then the money power is more powerful than the lawmaking power. Benjamin Franklin said, "The colonies would have gladly borne the little tax on tea and other matters had it not been that England took away from the colonies their money, which created unemployment and dissatisfaction." Thomas Jefferson. He said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children will awaken homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. James A. Garfield said, whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. Andrew Jackson said that to the money changers, the following words to the money changers who approached him in the drawing room of the White House. He said, gentlemen, I have had men watching you for a long time, and I'm convinced that you have used the funds of the bank to speculate in the breadstuffs of the country. When you won, you divided the profits amongst you, and when you lost, you charged it to the bank. You tell me that if I take the deposits from the bank and annul its charter, I shall ruin 10,000 families, and you know that may be true. Gentlemen, but that is your sin. Should I let you to go on, you will ruin 50,000 families, and that would be my sin. You are a den of vipers and thieves. And I've determined to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out. That was President Andrew Jackson. You know, Abraham Lincoln weighed in on the money issue, and he said during the Civil War, he had Congress issue $346 million in United States notes, which were spent into circulation as a debt-free and interest-free medium of exchange. And here's what he said about it. He said the people can and will be furnished with a currency as safe as their own government. Money will cease to be the master and will become the servant of humanity. Democracy will rise superior to the money power. The money power preys upon the nation in times of peace and conspires against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. It denounces as public enemies all who question its methods or throw light upon its crimes. So said Abraham Lincoln. Now, in the London Times, The Money Changers by Gertrude Coogan, published in 1935, said this, if that mischievous financial policy, which had its origin in the North American Republic during the late war in that country, if that should become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off its debts and be without a debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It'll become prosperous beyond precedent in the history of the civilized governments of the world. The brains and wealth of all the countries of the earth will go to North America. That government must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe. Well, Gertrude, you were exactly correct. Fortunately, you've destroyed our government. And that's good for the monarchies, and it's good for the money power. It's not good for you, and it's not good for me. Now, the American Bankers Association sent the following letter to all of their members on March 11, 1893. Here's what the bankers had to say back in 1893. They said, the interest of the national banks require immediate financial legislation by Congress. Silver certificates and treasury notes must be retired, and national bank notes upon a gold basis must be made the only money. This will require the authorization of $500 million to $1,000 million of new bonds on the basis of the circulation. You will retire one-third of your circulation and call one-half of your loans. Advocate an extra session of Congress to repeal the purchasing clause of the Sherman Law and act with other banks of your city in securing a large petition to Congress for its unconditional repeal. For the accompanying form, the future life of national banks is fixed and safe investments depends upon immediate action, as there is an increasing sentiment in favor of government legal tender notes and silver coinage. Now, the banks in 1893 recognized the danger to the banks. And they said, we can't have the United States government issuing its own money. We want to be issuing that money. And indeed, they put out a propaganda program, and they succeeded in convincing your great-great-granddaddy and mine that, yeah, we need more banks. We need paper money. And we certainly don't want silver, the poor man's gold. We want real gold out there. And then ultimately, they wanted to get rid of the gold, too. They can't function. They can't profit on just weights and balances. Banks, banking, and governments function and thrive on unjust weights and balances. You and I, the lay people, we thrive on gold and silver coin. William Jennings Bryan said there can be no reform without monetary reform. Charles A. Lindbergh Sr. said it is manipulation of credits that creates the big deposits. A person borrowing $100,000, we will say, the bank makes this note drawing interest but gives the borrower no money, simply gives him credit on the bank's books and hands the borrower a checkbook. That note increases the deposits of the bank $100,000. The bank has no additional actual money by that deal. The borrower pays his bills with checks. Persons who get the checks, with rare exceptions, deposit them in the same or some other bank. It simply amounts to a transfer of bank credits from the persons giving the checks to the persons receiving the checks. And the above example explains in a general way why it is that the banks have 7, 8, or 10 times as many deposits as there is money. It's a common saying that we do business on bank credit. It's nearer to truth to say that the bankers do business on borrowers' credit. Well, now, Major L.B. Angus, dates in Slump Ahead in Bonds. He said, the modern banking system manufactures money out of nothing. The process is perhaps the most astounding piece of sleight of hand that's ever been invented. The state of Alabama, House Joint Resolution 90, memorialized Congress to repeal the Federal Reserve Act. They passed and signed it by Governor Fob James on March 2, 1982. They said the Federal Reserve is not a government agency and is, in fact, an oppressive and extortionate privately owned money monopoly. Sir Josiah Stump, president of the Bank of England, said that banking was conceived in iniquity and born in sin. Bankers own the earth. Take it away from them, but leave them the power to create money, and with a flick of a pen, they will create enough money to buy it all back again. Take this great money power away from them, and all great fortunes like mine will disappear. And they ought to disappear, for then this would be a better and a happier world to live in. But if you want to continue to be the slaves of the bankers and pay the costs of your own slavery, then let the bankers continue to create money and control credit. Peter Cook, published by Monetary Science Publishing. Now that's just some of what world-famous men and bankers and politicians and economists have had to say about the money power. I'm simply a reporter reporting to you what's been going on for a long time. The bad news is that this isn't going to change, and the good news is you can change it for yourself in the morning. You do not have to participate in the banking system. Here in the United States, we actually have all of our gold and silver coin back. It's being minted every day at West Point, New York. There's a mint producing $50 gold pieces, $25, $10, and $5 gold pieces, and $1 silver dollars. 5% of the people in the country own 100% of the gold and silver. I own my share. I'm not complaining. I'm on a gold-based property monetary standard. Works like a shot. It worked like a shot for Massachusetts. Now, keep this in mind, because most people will tell me, well, I would do this if we could get the nation to do it, if we could get Congress to do it, if we could get other people to do it. You don't need anybody else to do it. None. Zero. Zilch. There's nobody in Ozark County that practices gold and silver coin. I'm it. I don't care if anybody else in the county practices gold or silver money. They're all poor, and I'm not. It doesn't bother me, and it doesn't hurt me. You know, it's almost like saying, I wouldn't go to Flo's whorehouse if everybody else would stop going. A man sins against his own body by going to Flo's. God himself said that isn't very smart. Just because everybody else is doing it, following a multitude to do evil doesn't make any sense for you. What you're really saying is, I would go along with the majority. Well, okay, but the majority are riding on the Titanic, and the majority are going to the bottom of the ocean. If you want to go with them, you'll be in good company. I'm going to stay up here on the top. I'm going to do everything in my power to get off this leaky tub. There won't be very many others get off here with me. The majority of people are going to stay on the ship. The majority of people are going to go down when it goes down. My common sense says I need to get off this leaky ship while I've still got an opportunity to get off of it in one piece. When this thing implodes, there's going to be great chaos. You need to be able to take care of yourself for 3 to 4 years while it sorts itself out. It's kind of like the revolution in China. They took over in 49. They killed 47 million people between 1949 and 57 until they got control. After 57, they got into firm control. Well, then they didn't feel so threatened, so they didn't need to kill so many people. So your job was in being able to survive from 49 to 57. You got to stay out of harm's way. Now, there's some other people here that have had some things to say about money. Horace Greeley made an observation. He says, while boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by an iniquitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression, which, though more refined, is not less cruel than the old system of chattel slavery. I remember Horace Greeley was living back in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s. He recognized that the money system, clear back in those days, was wicked and evil. And that's because the government was in the habit, in the policy process of funding banks and banking and lending upon usury. In the early days, from 1787 to 1862, we did pretty well. From 1862 on, we started funding with paper money, and in 1913, we really went bonkers. By 1933, we just plain lost it. Today, we're totally insane. Thomas Edison made an observation. He said, people who will not turn a shovel full of dirt on the project, that is the Muscle Shoals Dam, nor contribute a pound of material, will collect more money from the United States than will the people who supply all the material and do all the work. This is the terrible thing about interest. But here is the point. If the nation can issue a dollar bond, it can issue a dollar bill. The element that makes the bond good makes the bill good also. The difference between the bond and the bill is that the bond lets the money broker collect twice the amount of the bond and an additional 20%, whereas the currency, the honest sort provided by the Constitution, says nobody but those who contribute in some way, useful way. It is absurd to say that our country can issue bonds and cannot issue currency. Both are promises to pay, but one fattens the usurer and the other helps the people. If the currency issued by the people were no good, then the bonds would be no good either. It's a terrible situation when the government, to ensure the national wealth, must go in debt and submit to ruinous interest charges at the hands of men who control the fictitious value of gold, or the fictitious value of gold. Interest is the invention of Satan. Interest is the invention of Satan. I might point out, Thomas Edison only went to the third grade. I don't know what his intellect or his intelligence was. He's a pretty smart guy. And he was smart enough to see that interest is ruinous. I don't know if he learned that from the Bible or somebody told him. President Woodrow Wilson, who signed the Federal Reserve Act into law, said, a great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of the nation and all of our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the world. No longer a government of free opinion, no longer a government of conviction, the vote of the majority. That a government, or but rather a government by the opinion and duress of small groups of dominant men. Now, just before he died, Wilson is reported to have stated to friends that he had been deceived and that I have betrayed my country. He referred to the Federal Reserve Act passed during his presidency. Ralph M. Hawtrey, former Secretary of the British Treasury. Banks lend by creating credit, and they create the means of credit and payment out of nothing. Robert H. Hemphill, he was the credit manager of the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, Georgia. Here's an insider speaking. He says, "This is a staggering thought. We're completely dependent upon the commercial banks. Someone has to borrow every dollar we have into circulation. All of the cash and credit in circulation is borrowed. If the banks create ample synthetic money, we are prosperous. If not, we starve. We are absolutely without a permanent money system. When one gets a complete grasp of the entire picture, the tragic absurdity of our hopeless position is almost incredible. But there it is. It is the most important subject intelligent persons can investigate and reflect upon. It is so important that our present civilization may collapse unless it becomes widely understood and the defects remedied very soon." I can guarantee you that nobody's going to remedy the defects. We're not dealing with intelligent people in the electorate. Nothing's going to be done to change it. If there's any changes to be made, you're going to make them, and you're going to make them for yourself. And it'll be done at the individual level, or it isn't going to get done. Now, Congressman Louis T. McFadden said the Federal Reserve Banks are one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever seen. "There's not a man within the sound of my voice who does not know that this nation is run by the international bankers." McFadden died under mysterious circumstances about 1937. Now, over the last six programs, we've been talking about this thing of the national debt. Who told you about this problem? Who said to you, "There's a problem, and let me explain it to you"? Did the Republican Party, the Democratic Party? Well, listen to the individuals listed below, the organizations and publications that control rather completely what it is that you know and do not know. You take a look and you think about how much knowledge do you have between your ears, and then ask yourself, where did all of that information come from? How much do you know, and where did you get it? Now, I'm going to read to you a list, and let's see if any of these institutions, organizations, or people since 1920 have told you any of the simple truths about our iniquitous debt usury economic system, which you have read in this booklet. Now, this is a booklet called Billions for the Bankers, Debts for the People. It was written by Sheldon Emery, and he put a list in here. I'm going to read it to you. And listen to this. Presidents, vice presidents, or presidential candidates, did any of them tell you this information? Have you ever heard a president, a vice president, or a presidential candidate explain to you the money issue, the money problem, and what we need to do to solve it? How about any cabinet members, U.S. judges, or other appointed U.S. officials, or any U.S. senators or representatives except for Robert LaFollette, Charles Binderup, Charles Lindbergh Sr., Louis McFadden, and Wright Patman, or John Rarick? All of these senators are dead now. But did you ever hear of a senator? Did Dianne Feinstein, or Ted Kennedy, Arlen Specter, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Ronald Reagan, did anybody ever get out on the airwaves on his fireside chat and tell you anything about the money system? Who controls it? What we need to do to fix it? Where we're headed with Social Security, where we're headed with the national debt, I never have. How about any state governors? Did the governor of your state or any members of your state legislature, the Republican or Democratic Party, the Communist Party, the Socialist Workers Party, how about any other political party, the League of Women Voters, or other so-called voter information groups? How about any news sources, the Associated Press, UPI, Reuters? Have any large daily newspapers like the Washington Times, the Washington Post or the New York Times, have any of them said anything about this? How about newspaper columnists? Have you ever read one of the newspaper columnists that explained to you the money issue and what's wrong with our monetary system? How about any radio or TV networks? Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw? How about Rush Limbaugh or any of the talk show hosts? ABC, NBC, CBS, Mutual Don Lee, radio, television, newsmen, commentators, anybody. News magazines, Time, Life, Newsweek, Look, U.S. News and World Report, People Magazine. Have they ever mentioned a word in your entire lifetime? Have you ever seen an article that came out and said, listen, usury and interest is wicked and evil. Our money system is in the control of international bankers. Did you ever hear any of these sources ever quote Louis T. McFadden or George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln or James A. Garfield or any of these people that I've cited to you today and said, these people say that the money system and the monetary system is corrupt? How about any other widely circulated magazines, books sold on the newsstands and any bookstores, Book of the Month Club? Any other book clubs? The movies, if you've seen this in the movies, stage or other entertainment, although they often attack politics, religion, or Christian society, they never expose the money system, do they? How about university or college professors? When you went to college, did any college professor in economics explain to you this monetary system, the money system, like I've explained to you this week? Have you seen or heard any of that? How about elementary, high school, or college textbooks, or any other educator or educational organization such as the NEA, the PTA, or any similar organizations, labor unions, AFL, CIO, Teamsters, UMW, farm organizations, Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, NFO, United Farm Workers? The recent American agriculture movement has exposed debt and usury. Any farm publication, business organization such as the National Association of Manufacturers, the Better Business Bureau, Chamber of Commerce, any trade business publication or organization? How about the medical, the scientific, or the professional organizations? Have any of them, the AMA, have they reported to you on the monetary system? How about civic or fraternal organizations like the Rotary, the Elks, the Lions, the Moose, the Eagles, the Oddfellows? How about veterans organizations, the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, disabled vets? How about the hundreds of civil rights movements, students, women's lib groups, and similar protest organizations or publications? They protest racism, atomic weapons, war, pollution, and scores of other supposed wrongs, but they never expose or object to the robbery of the people by the billionaire bankers. How about the Masonic Order, the lodges or the publications, the Knights of Columbus? Any Catholic pope, bishop, or priest ever spilled the beans on the money monopoly? How about Father Coughlin of Michigan? He spoke on the radio and wrote books in the 1930s protesting the bankers' plunder of America. He was silenced in a few years on direct orders of the Pope. Father Coughlin of Michigan, silenced by the Pope. Does that tell you something? Since then, very few priests have mentioned the plunder. How about any Jewish rabbis or Jewish organizations such as the United Synagogues of America, B'nai B'rith, the Anti-Defamation League, the World Council of Churches, the National Council of Churches, any denomination, Protestant minister or church, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christian Science or similar, charismatic Pentecostal ministers or churches, non-denominational or independent ministers or churches, religious magazines, publishing houses or bookstores, evangelists, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, Jerry Falwell, any crusaders on radio and television, your minister, anybody? Has anybody said to you that the money system is wicked, evil, and it needs to be reformed, and you need to get out of it? Well, as you can see from the above list, virtually no individual or organization of any influence in America, including religious organizations, exposes or opposes the evil debt usury monetary system. And that alone proves what has been charged in this little book, that so many important individuals and organizations are working with the money plunderers or under their control, that the average person has little chance of ever hearing the truth about the money system or the money issue. Hey, I gotta take a break. Hang on here for a minute and let's take a little commercial break and we'll be right back. You have been listening to The Law Hour, or I should say you are listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the internet at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. You know, many people will call the law school and ask me how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Now, keep in mind that most of the topics that you hear on this radio program, I teach in detail in one of my 8 schools here at the law school. Now, for example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD. He codified that into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 were incorporated into our federal constitution and our Bill of Rights. And the common law was taken by Alfred the Great from the Mosaic Code, which was given to Moses at Mount Sinai, and it is recorded in the Bible in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8, and it includes negligence, insurance, and taxes, such as income, property, and Social Security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws of Scripture, and they work a theft on everyone that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and Social Security, and that's the basis of my tax and my status school. We owe this income tax, all right, and we owe it because we signed up with Social Security. That Social Security account is the nexus. And that Social Security tax, because we contracted into it, we owe it. That's why I contend that it's time to contract out of it. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Billions for the bankers, debts for the people. I've showed you time and time again and over where this problem comes from. It's paper money, unjust weights and balances. Paper money takes more than one form. It can be a mortgage on your house. It can be a personally secured note at the bank, a line of credit, a credit card. All of these instruments of credit inflate our economy, inflate our currency, and we're headed right now for financial disaster, financial ruin. It doesn't mean that the people all die. It doesn't mean that the people all, you know, give up and quit and leave America and go to Mexico. The people went through a Great Depression in the 1930s, and the nation survived it and came up on the other side. A lot of people lost everything they had and had to start over again. That'll more than likely happen to you. You're going to lose everything, and you'll have to start over again. For those of you that are 65, 75, or 85, that's pretty serious business. For those of you that are 15, 25, or 35, it's a blow, but it's not fatal. You'll come back from it. The Russians have. Everybody in the world goes through this. There's no real reason to go through this. It's like going to Flo's Whorehouse and getting a dose of clap. It isn't necessary. It's avoidable. We had a choice to make, and we made the choice. in 1913 with the advent of the Federal Reserve System, we had a choice to make, and we made it. Individuals were never forced to use paper money. There was gold and silver, and had the people of America exercised their constitutional rights, and had they exercised their moral discernment, had they had any moral discernment to exercise, they simply would not have done business with the banks. For instance, let's just take a look at it. Let's suppose that everybody in America today were to perform like George Gordon performs and behaves today. There's 300 million of us. And today you got banks and insurance companies, and you've got all these business adventures out there, you know, that are, you got the Republicans and Democrats, and you got this, all this business going on and all this politics going on. And it's all supported by you 300 million Americans. The reason the Bank of America opened its doors this morning is because they have millions of customers nationwide that want to do business with them. George Gordon is not one of them. Now let's suppose that all the people of America did the same thing. That means that we would all close our bank accounts today. What would happen to the banking industry tomorrow? Why, they would be in the Congress just screaming like gutshot banshees that action has to be taken and people like George Gordon have to be silenced. Why, it's ruining the economy. So instead of saying, well, gee, I guess the people don't want to buy our product anymore, they would do any and everything in their power to keep it going, including killing people if that's what it takes. They've done it in the past. Why won't they do it in the future? But let's just suppose that you and I all closed our bank accounts, cashed in our insurance policy, stopped paying our insurance, canceled all of the policies, all the insurance. Instead of practicing limited liability, we would go back to practicing strict liability. Everybody's responsible for his own actions. Instead of paper money, we would all go back to gold and silver coin or some other form of wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. People are saying, my God, don't you understand that that would spell the end of Exxon and I work at the oil refinery? That's right. That's right. Everything closes down. This is what happened in 1789. And by 1792, George Washington wrote a letter and he said, in 36 months, the economy has turned around and I can't believe how prosperous the nation has become in just 36 months with the use of gold and silver coin. 36 months. What I told you. It takes 36 months, 3 years, and you can have $100,000 buried in a hole in the ground. Does this mean that you can make the transition today with no pain? The answer is no, sir. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I was unable to make the transition from $1 million a year to where I'm at today with no pain. I had to close that old business out. I was on a leaky ship. The ship ultimately was going to sink anyway. I got off the ship before it sank, so I can say today I never went through bankruptcy. My ship didn't sink. I liquidated it and took the money and went off and did something else. In other words, I did what I told you yesterday. I said, you salvage everything that you can. What is it that's most valuable? What can you get off of here? And then let this sucker sink, and let's get back to shore, and let's build us a new ship with the salvaged proceeds that we're going to get off here with. There's going to be some pain. There's going to be some suffering and anguish. Now, people will say to me, well, I'm unwilling to do that. Well, that's all right with me. Don't let me get in your way. If you don't want to sacrifice today, why don't you just keep right on spending and borrowing and spending and borrowing until finally your ship sinks? That's what everybody's done in the past. That's what the Germans did in 1923. The ship sank. They lost everything, and they started over. And that's what you'll do. You'll lose everything, and you'll start over. Is the pain of losing everything and starting over greater than losing half and starting over earlier? That's the decision you got to make. So in my case, I decided that instead of waiting until the ship sank and starting over with nothing, I decided that I would get off the ship with half of what I've got, let the ship sink, and when I started over again, I started over with about half. Most people cannot let go of that peanut in the middle, and they'll hang on until they get captured. You know, the mighty hunter comes up and just picks up the little monkey, takes his arm, takes the peanut away from him anyway. He won't let go of the peanut voluntarily, so the white captor, the hunter, takes the peanut away from him and then puts the little monkey in a box and hauls him off to the Bronx Zoo. So he loses the peanut and he loses his freedom both. He could have let go of the peanut and kept his freedom, which was probably worth more than the peanut. But you know, that's what vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear does to all of us. It warps and it perverts your view of reality. We all live in this make-believe world called the United States of America. This is a make-believe Alice in Wonderland play that you're living through. It's about to come to an end. We just don't know when. I think you and I and everybody else looking around here says, you know, I just don't believe this can go on forever, but we all hope it does. I say it from time to time, every time I do one of these type programs on economics, I say, well, I hope George Bush can pull the fat out of the fire one more time. I was real happy that Bill Clinton could pull the fat out of the fire one more time. I was real happy when interest rates, which topped 21% back in 1979, finally went back down. Inflation at 13% went back down to 2 or 3%, and Ronald Reagan pulled the fat out of the fire one more time. And I'm rooting for George Bush. I hope George Bush and Alan Greenspan can pull the fat out of the fire one more time, because it gives me more time to prepare. There's never enough time to get ready for the sinking of the Titanic. I mean, if you had prepared for that for the full 5 days when you left Southampton and were sailing out to the middle of the Atlantic, if you'd had all 5 days to prepare, it wouldn't have been enough. Most people didn't have any time to prepare, and if you think about it for a moment, what if I came to you and I said, you know, you're riding on the Titanic, here we are on April the 10th or 12th, 1914, and I walk up to you and I say, hey, Bob. Hey, Sally. This ship is going to hit an iceberg and it's going to sink. I've had a vision from God. I'm a prophet. I'm telling you what's going to happen. Do you think you would have believed me? Would you believe some lunatic who walks up to you and says the economy of the United States is going to collapse? Why, no. No, nobody's going to believe such a report. Is it because it isn't true? Is it because it's impossible? Is it because it's preposterous? No. Is it impossible for the Titanic to hit an iceberg? Is it impossible for the Titanic to sink? But you see, the people that were riding on the Titanic were living in a fantasy world. They were told that this ship is unsinkable. It has watertight doors. There was a sister ship built. In fact, when the Titanic sank, the sister ship called the Britannic was still sitting in Belfast on its ways being completed. Well, the Britannic was completed, and after the Titanic sank, they refitted the ship. I mean, they went through that thing, and they said, we're going to learn from our mistakes so that this doesn't happen again. So they went all over that Britannic, and they made the Britannic unsinkable. They thought the Titanic was unsinkable, but by God, now they made the Britannic unsinkable. And so when World War I broke out, they converted the Britannic into a hospital ship. And one day, while it was sailing empty on its way back to Turkey to pick up another load of British wounded and taken back to England, the ship hit a mine and sank in 56 minutes. Did you hear that? The Titanic took 2 hours and 20 minutes to sink. And they said, this is abhorrent. This has got to be fixed. And so they made all the repairs, made all the changes, did everything they could to fix the Britannic so that wouldn't happen again. It hit a mine and sank in 56 minutes. The Lusitania sank in 20 minutes. Well, you know, so much for the highest priced technology that the lowest bidder can make, huh? Now, we have witnessed the collapse of the Roman Empire, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, Chaldeans, Assyrians, Hitler's Third Reich, Charlemagne, and the French Republic. You know, we've been watching this for thousands of years. Nations, empires, and civilizations aren't forever, boys and girls. They're here today and gone tomorrow. They're like a wisp of smoke. Here today and gone tomorrow. And that's where the United States of America is heading. It doesn't have to be that way. We could back off. We could change. The nation could change. Better yet, individuals can change. Individuals can be survivors. There were survivors off of the Titanic. There were survivors off the Lusitania. There will be survivors from the United States of America. There were survivors from Rome, Egypt, the Hitler Third Reich. There's always been survivors. People have to look ahead at reality and hard, cold facts. Make hard, cold, brutal decisions up front. And then carry those decisions through to completion. Every action that we take has an equal opposite reaction. Mistakes that we make have consequences and penalties that are coming up in the future. When we go to Flo's Whorehouse, AIDS, herpes, and VD knocks at our door. Going to Flo's is a decision that we make, just like going to the bank and opening a checking account, accepting a credit card, or signing a promissory note at the closing of the purchase of a house. These are decisions that we make. These decisions have consequences. They have penalties. You sign the mortgage and you buy one house for yourself and two for the banker. Now, everybody else is doing it, and so the argument is, well, since my dad did it and his dad did it and his dad did it and I'm doing it, it must be right. Question arises, is there a better way? People with money don't spend it. People without money spend money, as evidenced by the fact that they don't have any. There are 24 hours in a day. Mayor Rothschild never had 1 minute in a day more than the poorest bondservant that lived in his era. Nelson Rockefeller didn't have anything up on anybody else in America when he was alive, and he was a multimillionaire. John D. Rockefeller didn't have any more time available to him than did anybody else working in the mines or working in the cornfields of Pennsylvania. But he used his time more productively, and he saw reality. He saw opportunity. He took advantage of it. And I've told my students in business class for years, opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. Whoever it was that coined the observation that opportunity knocks once evidently must have been a poor wage earner, because opportunity knocks every day. There are more opportunities sitting on my desk right now than I can take advantage of. I don't have enough money, time, or expertise to take advantage of all of them, so I cherry pick. I take the best available deals that are available to me right now. Now, I teach a business school, and in my business school, I tell my students very plainly, if you're of average intelligence and if you're willing to make changes and obey God and keep His commandments, you can have $100,000 in gold buried in a hole in the ground in 36 months. Don't plan on 12 months or 24. In some cases, it may take you 48 months or 5 years, but you'll achieve your goal. You'll have $100,000. Most people can do it in 36 months. But you have to start at zero COD. And, you know, most of you people aren't at zero COD. You're below ground level. You're buried in the ground. And the first job you've got to succeed at is getting yourself out of debt. You've got to get up to zero COD before you can make any money. That's your first task, your first job. Hanging on to the peanut isn't going to help you do that. Now, you're not going to hurt my feelings if you don't take action. I'm just here to make a report. I've given you that report. I told you the story. I gave you the sources of the information. On the Law Hour, it's my job to prove my points. So I have cited to you names. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Abraham Lincoln. Dates. I cited to you the dates that these events transpired, like Massachusetts in 1749, made their change, and sat queen of the colonies for a long period of time when they went back to gold and silver coin. I told you of the times and gave you examples. There are seven elements in this: names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. I identified the places in Rhode Island, North Carolina, Great Britain. I gave you the facts. I said, this is what happened, and here's how it happened. I cited witnesses, and I named the names of the witnesses who were there, like George Mason. The names, the dates, the times, the places, the facts, the witnesses, and the evidence. I've presented the evidence. I gave you an offer of proof. I said when I started this, let me show you this money problem. Let me show you how this money is created, where it comes from, who does it, why. Many, many books have been written on the money system and the money manipulation. It's been going on for thousands of years, boys and girls. Before they knew how to make paper money, they were taking copper and sticking it in with the gold. You know, the South African Krugerrand to this day is 10% copper. That's why a Krugerrand has a different color than the Canadian maple leaf or the American eagle. Our gold coins are bullion coins. Take a look at the old double eagles. We're 10% copper. The debasing of our money has been going on forever. That's nothing new. And it's going to continue. Nobody's going to make a change unless you personally want to make a change. So I'm not here trying to overthrow the Federal Reserve or abolish the income tax. I'm not a tax protester. The majority of Americans want the income tax. The majority of Americans want credit. And they don't have any objection at all to paying interest. None. Zero. Zilch. I've never talked to anybody that ever said I'm opposed to interest. Name one. Just name anybody who's opposed to interest. You know, except for God and the Bible and George Gordon, you're going to be hard-pressed to find anybody opposed to interest. Paper money, the Federal Reserve, mortgages, stocks, bonds. You know, you could go talk to Martha Stewart today, and she wouldn't have anything against or wouldn't be opposed to buying and selling stocks, the very vehicle that's threatening to put her in prison. She believes in stocks and bonds and commercial paper. My God, she made $1 billion. And she made it in commerce, trade, commerce, business, and industry. People are in favor of something that makes them money and profits. And there's always a few winners. Most people are losers, but there are a few winners. Take a look at the people that buy and sell stocks, and how many people do you know that have made money at stocks? I only know of one. Old Russell Harvey, it's the only one I ever heard of. He did. And he got inside information, told him to sell in 1927, and he did. He did. And he made a pretty handsome profit off of it. Averill Harriman did that in 1927. He sold out. Bought back in the 30s and made a killing later on. Those are insider trader deals. And yeah, there's lots of money to be made in paper money. Lots of money to be made in oil. But if you can't hang on to it, what's the purpose or the point in making it? If you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. So in my tax school and in my business school, those are two separate schools now, about 30 hours each, I take a student through not just the money issue, but I take him through business, trade, commerce, business, and industry that affects the public interest, and I compare that with private business and the laws of economics that come from the Bible, like the land Sabbaths and Jubilees, and don't use unjust weights and balances, and thou shalt not steal, crazy laws that once in a while you may hear. You won't hear them in church, but once in a while you may hear somebody mention something about the Ten Commandments or thou shalt not steal. And I take my students through and show them plainly, here are your choices. You can practice income or increase. Income has an income tax. It has a built-in penalty. And it used to run 91% under Roosevelt. It's down to 36% under George Bush. It's good of George Bush to lower the income tax down to 36%. Remember, God told you he wanted 10%, and we said, hell no, we won't go. We'll pay 36% to George Bush. We will not pay 10% to God. So I'm going to show you that it's in your financial best interest to pay God 10% and tell George Bush that you're not going to give him 36. Mormons give George Bush 36% and God 10%. Cost them 46%. And they have demonstrated that God was wrong, that they can serve two masters. They can serve God and mammon. Even though Matthew 6, verse 24 says you can't do that, by God, those Mormons can. And they're doing it. So I teach my students very plainly, you owe God 10% or you owe the state 36%, but you do not owe God and the state 46%. You owe one or the other. Give the finger to one God, but don't give the finger to both gods at the same time. Make peace with one side or the other. I call that common sense. Now what you're looking for here is, I want $100,000 in a hole in the ground in the next 36 months. Do you think you can do that by bailing water out of your sinking ship? Do you think you can pay off all that credit card debt, the mortgage on your house, and the rest of your obligations? Do you think you can be a surety underwriter for the national debt, global debts of the banking industry called derivatives? You think you can pay all that off, do you? Well, I came to the conclusion, the real bottom line conclusion, that I couldn't pay them, and I went one step further, and I said, furthermore, I'm not going to pay them. I'm going to look out for my interests and my family. I'm not looking out for the interests of the bankers, the globalists, and the politicians. Well, there's our story. That's a seven-part story on the national debt. I appreciate you being with me this week. Thanks so much for listening. And so let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information on the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, you can get more of that information from our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, biblical law, and all from the scriptural perspective. The Gordon Law School is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by pre-arrangement only. We are not open to the public. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. The law school and the Law Hour and the website is updated weekly, and it has our radio logs, schedule, and archives, and it can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the internet. Well, there's the signal that says our time is up. We're going to have to leave it right there. So I'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. So until then, goodbye, friends.